Welcome to another installment of From Out of the City. My name is William Eptivalt, the romantic poet of the internet. And this week I've got a little bit of a surprise for you. No fancy music or special effects. Back in fall of 2005, when I was getting ready to launch this podcast, I went into the studio with my old friend Alan McDonald of the Alan McDonald Band. And he helped me record a few pieces. I've never been comfortable with my own voice. I think it's inherent in most people. They don't like the sound of their own voice. It's not the way they hear themselves in their head. But we sat down and we recorded, I believe it was 9 pieces. And I listened to them, and I hated them. And I listened to them again, and I listened to them again and again and again until I could tolerate the sound of my own voice. This was essential before I could start doing this show, because I do the vast majority of my own editing and production, and not being able to listen to what you're doing would be like editing a film when you're blind. Could be a real challenge. But anyway, Alan McDonald and I go way back. How far back? Well, let's see, we met in the 8th grade. He was one of the first people I met at Morgantown Junior High School. We became fast friends. We hung out for a few years, and then as our subcultures parted ways in the latter years of high school, we drifted apart. And to be honest, I thought he was lost to antiquity. It was, to my amazement and surprise, almost exactly a year and a half ago, when I encountered a woman who turned out to be his wife, Deb McDonald, and she put us back together. Alan has been a successful musician and knows his way around a studio and most instruments. He's really a remarkable musician, and perhaps sometime I'll have to have him on the show to share some of his music with us. But anyway, Alan and I got our heads together, and I went into his studio, Studio A in Morgantown, West Virginia, and we laid down these tracks. And what I'd like to do is, with a little commentary to go along with the pieces, I'd like to share with you these naked tracks, because it has become apparent in recent time that there's a call for my next CD to be a CD of naked tracks, tracks without musical or production adornment. And although I do believe I have evolved as a public speaker since I began working on these, I understand better how to use my voice with a microphone and with recording equipment than I did back then. And it's still interesting, nonetheless, to hear these in their raw form. So sit back, relax, and this week's From Out of the City takes a look at my naked tracks. First up, we're going to have Irained Poetry. If you've ever been to one of my readings, you've almost certainly heard this piece. I wrote it several years ago and kind of placed it to one side. It was originally conceived and executed as sort of a tribute to poet Donald Hall, whose work I never really appreciated in his lifetime. But later on, when I went back and looked at it, there were some of his projective works that I really enjoyed. And so this was written more or less in his style, in his fashion. And I never really thought much of it until I was at a poetry group meeting, the Poetry Society of Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, which that town was largely destroyed by Katrina last year. And I pulled this one out for a reading and got tremendous response from the other poets there. And since then, it's become a mainstay of most of my readings. So here we have Irained Poetry.
There is no fear on the edge. Joy. Joy is what I find in the instants between moments, when my feet are touching nothing but sky, and the rocks recede to return, sooner or later, driven by grave gravity and the intemperate nature of natural law. But in the brisant moment, leaping from precipice to precipice, I am reborn, triggered and transfigured. Worn away are the chains of, the pains of, the stains of mortal mediocrity, and I am one with the clouds, and I reign poetry, for that is my nature. as you turn your face skyward to catch a few drops on a tongue parched by the dry air of memory and the sun of shallow sentiments, sold in the Hallmark rack in the name of mass seduction. And I rain poetry. To irrigate the fields of forever and make them ready for the seeds planted without your realizing it, when you waved to me as I ran the cliffs, high above the plains of stale acceptance, and danced, and danced, and danced like a hurricane at the thought of you naked in the rain. And I rained poetry, bringing the thunder at the appropriate moment when all other senses were spent, and only sound could penetrate the wet shell of overloaded synapses, what passes for the echo of fire that surged and purged the very ions of our irony. And I rained poetry, calling the winds to lift me, to gift me with the words that you would carry, eroded into your sandstone soul. Never more the monolith, but an aggregate of your essence with flecks of my pitch blend, bound to you by eloquence that quenched an ancient thirst, cursed to you in a garden you will never see, except in the mirages of the maelstrom. And I rained poetry, and it was nothing compared to a single honest kiss. But it was, in the absence of passion, a worthy golem in the armies of solitude. Up on the cliffs, where I still dance with the winds and call the thunder, even when no one watches, or cares, or dares to dance along. For that is my nature.
Alan was so into getting an authentic sound when we made these recordings that you'll notice in the background the sound of me moving papers about on the music stand as I'm going from one page to another in a given work or preparing my next work. It's really listening to that is what turned me on to the notion of leaving my recordings largely organic. You will notice even on some of the musically backed ones, background noises that are authentic to the moment when I made the recording. I don't always like them, but I think they add a lot of humanity to the work. And I think nowadays there is so much that is done in the art world that is sterile and cold-blooded. I think a little reality is called for, don't you? Next up, we have a short work, but one of my better-known works, The Unicorns. This poem was written a long time ago, and it's about a young man, or could even be a young woman, reflecting on their desire to step beyond the innocence of youth. It has been referred to as my most perfectly realized poem. I like to think there's some works I've done that are at least in the same class as it, but there's no denying that structurally it has great voice to it, and to have been written by an 18-year-old poet named William F. DeVault from Morgantown, West Virginia, it's pretty good. So here we have The Unicorns.
Please come a while. Remain in play. The unicorns won't come today. The fairies and their virtued kin shall stay away to paint my sin with ancient red and angry fire. Please come to me and linger. Please. I do not mock. I dare not tease. Just bring with you an honest smile and share with me, for all the while, a love of life and true desire. The unicorns no longer guard the meadow just beyond my yard. They snort with shame and true disdain upon a hope of age's pain, and brand me, by their pride, a liar.
Next up, one of my favorites. This one is from my book, From an Unexpected Quarter, and it's called The Darker Angels. It expresses a very dark, ominous, almost theocracidal tone. I'm not 1,000% sure where it came from. It certainly could be seen as the notion of evil being omnipresent in the world, so much so that even God has to sleep with one eye open. But I was very pleased with the tone and timbre of this work, and I just thought it would be a nice counterpoint to the more romantic and gentle pieces that I was recording in this session with Alan. So, here we have The Darker Angels.
A unity of luminescence, the presence of an ethereal incandescent thought, caught in the quintessential webs of our predestinate obstinate denial of what is not less than the truth. Reality, flinty and dark, like obsidian geodes, hard cards in the tarot deck of the infinite universe's possibilities. A guard, pardoned for their diligence, for their sleeping master's whim and will, killing time with a clockwork knife. A blade unsheathed the silence. Violence forsworn for the incumbent threat of guilt and penance, from whence flows our memories, cold and callous and calculating. And God sleeps with one eye open tonight.
Of the 10 poems that comprise the collected work Damascus, probably none is quite as simple and beautiful as Damascus Movement 3. For you unfamiliar with the Damascus series, they were a series of poems I wrote about my courtship and relationship with my second wife. They express the amazing development that was that relationship, because it came out of nowhere, I think, for both of us. And I likened it unto Saul's conversion on the road to Damascus, where suddenly something that seemed impossible was possible. And I think we both benefited from the relationship. I think we both gained and learned a lot. And I'm grateful for having had her in my life. So anyway, here is Damascus, Movement 3.
Aphrodite does not barter her beauty for hollow promise. Wisdom girds glib eloquences in a veil of truth, the sooth that soothes us, like the blood of aloe fresh cut from a garden, where we swore we would never walk again. Jasmine. A thought slides like electric lovers across a sea of tranquility, where the dust is kicked skyward by the blue flames and boots of the explorers. I awaken from the dream, sightless, paralyzed, the cold catalepsy illustrating the fear of death I had forgotten. But there is an incandescence in the darkness, and, for once, I sink back to sleep, aware of God and cognizant of the pattern in the tapestry as I await Rome, content that Damascus was no illusion, this time.
No, I think that's a perfectly lovely work, and I think it's a beautiful tribute. And I'm going to keep it in my catalog despite the dissolution of the marriage, because I think that anything less than that would be emotionally disingenuous, morally dishonest, and literarily reprehensible. If anybody has any issue with me on that, I don't hide from people who have issues with me. I'm not a coward. I may be an idiot sometimes, but I'm not a coward. Humbles sous les mains en face de Dieu is the DeVault family motto. It means humbled only before God. Doesn't mean we think we're better than other people. Just means we think we're as good as everyone else. And that's how it's supposed to be. This next piece is Damascus Movement 7 from that same series. And the unifying quote used in it is the DeVault family motto. I think it's a wonderful statement about love and theology and how they go hand in hand. Enjoy.
Humble sous les mains en face de Dieu. And so the great I am must have loaned a reasonable likeness to you. For I am humbled, cut down to size, a bite-sized morsel for digestion in the gullet of the phoenix. The image of the Maker reborn in graceful secrets, a sadness set in stones of jet and jade and sapphire. I have cut the stones we selected. I have kissed the hems of the elected. I have sheathed the souls unprotected. Wings drawn to launch pirouettes to land amid dry stones and forgotten bones left on the desert floor by the road. After images of shadow dance. Bright shades casting calculated crimes in stark relief of the honored dead. Humble soulement en face de Dieu. So the prophecy and loss, counted in killing stones, is crushed to the crust. Sacraments in a cul-de-sac sent skimming over the bleached beach sand dunes that stretch far and away into hope. I cast the runes in riddles, rhythmed to force slow, staccato memory to telegraph the tempest tonight. I will worship with my memories. I will worship with my threnodies. I will worship with my vanities. Zeus and Apollo, Odin and Thor, small gods of passion, small gods of war, acolytes on acid etch the night. Futility folds a hand of prayer and draws to an inside straight, a queen to take the place of fours and knaves. Humble soulement en face de Dieu. I will touch the face of God tonight and offer earnest prayers in the dark.
And now for something perhaps a little more romantic and less intense. The poem Sithara's Song strummed lightly as the sun leaps the horizon marked the reemergence of my muse known as the Truth or the Wisp into my sphere. It's actually kind of a expressionistic view of a lunch meeting that we had. She'd expressed a desire to sit down and talk with me, and far be it from me to deny her my presence. So we met, and little elements you see in this are based on actual things I observed with her and with the setting when we sat down to lunch. The poem actually paints a very accurate picture, just not in a palette that you may notice. So here we have Sithara's Song strummed lightly as the sun leaps the horizon.
The dream came again last night. Silence begging sound like hunger or thirst begs ambrosia in cup or bowl, or mug. And music swam in like a barefoot Mexican dancer, bound to the light like the smoke of fires faded, as shadows hug the corners of the stonework spires that pierce the skies with hard intentions to a softened grace. Placed aloft on legs of granite and marble and brick, the echo dies and I am left to ponder another feline dancing, soft and silent. A smile of curious wonder woven in jaws that already hold me in their web of kiss and word, cold from the senses sent soaring by your lavender claws as they approach, the cool stone by warm feet obscured, and as always, you charm the night like an eager lover to your bidding, your laugh catching on the stars that hover.
I know, but I love it when I self-reference. And there we had a reference to my classic poem, Monument. So, just suck it up. These are my poems. Sometimes I enjoy having a little fun with them. Next up, we're back to the darkness with From Out of the City. I won't go into too much detail on this poem. So much has been writ of it and about it and towards it and over it. I just think it's a terrific piece, so much so that I had named a book after it at one time. It was written back in 1997, 1998, somewhere along there. Pay particular attention to the images of it.
From out of the city came words. Small words. Words like lead pellets ringing on armor, stinging on flesh, and carrying a message of rage and honor defended. The prophet spoke in broken syntax. The facts spoke for themselves in time, and he was carried to the city square to be stoned to death, in accordance with the law. Morning slid over the horizon as if on rails invisible and split the night like Trinity. Infinity seemed possible except for the silence of the waking world, one eye open. Mourn the night and rise. Rise to your feet and climb the hill you always said you'd climb before the end of all things, for it is upon you even in the optimism of dawn. Mourn the night and rise. Rise to your vision, rise. The afterlife is not waiting for you, but you for it, and the madness of martyrs may call it too soon. Mourn the night and rise. Spread your bastard wings and catch the feral winds that come on the sun's fire to sweep away the night into small shadow piles in corners. From out of the city came words. Final words. Words like Eden, Gethsemane, Golgotha. And then the silence, the violence of indifference.
And once again the pendulum swings back to Soubrette, My Heart Blossoms. Little poem about a man contemplating the woman that he loves. There's really not much more to say about it, except to let you hear it.
My heart blossoms, and the petals are fragrant like the wrists of a mistress, stained and ordained with a perfume prepared to meet the expectations of a lover. My heart blossoms, and the colors explode in the spectrum of ancient light, caught at the far end of the universe, perceived new, but from the beginning, what always was. My heart blossoms, and all the thorns melt and run into nothingness. For pain is not regent in a world where there are the petals and fragrance of your lips, ripe with emotion and hope.
Another piece often requested and delivered at my readings is The Patchwork Skirt of My Love, which won an award back in 2001, I believe it was, from Predators and Editors in their online readers poll. It's a lovely piece, very evocative of the Golden Heart Cycles, and indeed I sometimes count it as the 50th poem in the Golden Heart Cycles. So, give it a listen. Let yourself go into the vignette that is The Patchwork Skirt of My Love.
The sound of soft fingertips across the strings of a lute, strumming the memories, humming the melody of life, and I am lost in the possibilities of your presence. Pleasant peasant prayers that lead to the summit of the mountain in the distance where legends reign. Kings cannot know this brandywine, princes pass perplexed, and all the bishops seem ignorant of the nature of God when their ignorance of the crux of creation is displayed, paraded in the sudden dance of a smiling child by the fire. And I am lost in the reverent reveries of this revelation. Play for me that melody, the one you tried to teach me, you tried to reach me with when I despaired of lost love, and the angels and fairies all seemed annoying pinpoints that pricked and sticked and stole the moment that was mine, and you came for me, barefoot and ignorant, like a poet. And the fires swam into the sky, and I was reborn, torn to pieces and reassembled like a patchwork skirt to brush your bare legs in the summer heat, and to defeat the angry winds that would come down from the mountains, mounting the horses of hoarfrost to charge your charms. I live now, in more than just abstract recollections of a score of forgetful lovers who would not give me second thought were it not for the trinkets of my words they wear as bright badges as they tell their tales of the pale blue moon of memory. And they don't wear the patchwork skirt of my love, or play the lute.
And finally, we have Love Gods of a Forgotten Religion. You didn't think I'd let you out of here without this one. I've always considered this one a challenge to read publicly because there's so many places to trip the tongue in it. But all in all, it's a remarkable piece that I always enjoy rereading because I'm always finding nuances in it that even I didn't realize were in there. Next time you come to see one of my readings, make sure you request it if I don't do it. I'm always in the mood to give it a shot. So I'll close out with this piece, but just let me say thank you very much for coming by this week. Join us next week for From Out of the City. And this is William F. DeVault, the romantic poet of the internet. Have a good day.
Apollo pales and sails across a sky of colors intricate. Slate gray and a blue like the eyes of Aphrodite, impregnating memory with a starting point for blending, bending the spectrum into greens of life and the violets of passion. And in those times, we are the love gods of a forgotten religion. Mythic mysteries that stir the slip of idols to be cast for a past we abruptly dropped, like a half-perfected statue of a cat goddess, modesty growing moss on stones that slide deep into the silence. They are recalled, they and their kin, for they left their stones, their temples, their tales of heroes and heroics, permanent subtext for the muscles of imagination flexed in a show of strength, the length of thought caught not on the brambles of distraction. With incantated prayers, we are the love gods of a forgotten religion. Chants and cants and, my, how we prance without pants in the trance of our blood chemistry going to alchemy in the laboratory of evolution. Our hormonocentric heresies forsworn for the priests of a fed hunger. We shall not leave such Olympian statuary. Nary clue will endure that with motives pure and thoughts unsure we cured Gordius of the intricacies of logical whim. The sword of Alexander ample answer to the recent regent riddles of barren paramours. For on these shores we are the love gods of a forgotten religion. Knowing that, in the eyes of the romantic, a pigeon is a dove, pure and perfect sacrifice for the price of kisses bartered for blessings spread in a holy oil of the skin, shared in an heated suspension. Freya passes and serenades of Bragi are unrecorded, paper faded and temperaments jaded in the ironic skepticism of youth and truth obscured by desire, fire to a pyre of inconvenient hopes that rope us in a bound harness of caresses, cauterizing our bleeding, needy hearts. We are love gods of a forgotten religion. The idols are left as curiosity for tourists yet unborn, shorn of taboo like a Nazarite's hair, heir to the wonderment of children and lovers, innocent seeking answers that they alone can understand and cherish.